20th. This morning at breakfast we had a terrific scene. A letter arrives for Theodore. He opens it, turns white and red, frowns, falters, and then informs us that the clever widow has broken off her engagement. No wedding, therefore, and no departure for Theodore. The bonhomme was furious. In his fury he took the liberty of calling poor Mrs. Parker, the sister, a very uncivil name. Theodore rebuked him with perfect good taste and kept his temper. "If my opinions don't suit you, Mr. Lyle," the old man broke out, "and my mode of expressing them displeases you, you know you can easily protect yourself."
"My dear Mr. Sloane," said Theodore, "your opinions as a general thing interest me deeply, and I have never ceased to act beneficially upon the information of my own. Your mode of expressing them is always brilliant, and I wouldn't for the world, after all our pleasant intercourse, separate from you in bitterness. Only, I repeat, your qualification of my sister's conduct is perfectly uncalled for. If you knew her, you would be the first to admit it." There was something in Theodore's look and manner as he said these words which puzzled me all morning. After dinner, finding myself alone with him, I told him I was glad he was not obliged to go away. He looked at me with the mysterious smile I have mentioned, thanked me, and fell into meditation. As this bescribbled chronicle is the record of my follies as well as of my haute fée, I needn't hesitate to say that for a moment I was a good deal vexed. What business has this angel of candour to do in signs and portents to look unutterable things? What right has he to do so with me especially, in whom he has always professed an absolute confidence? Just as I was to cry out, "Come, my dear fellow, this affectation of mystery has lasted quite long enough. Favour me at last with the result of your cognitions." As I was on the point of thus expressing my impatience on his ominous behaviour, the oracle at last addressed itself to utterance.
Page 19. "You see, my dear Max," he said, "I can't, in justice to myself, go away in obedience to the sort of notice that was served on me this morning. What do you think of my actual footing here?" "Theodore's actual footing here seems to me impossible. Of course I said so." "No, I assure you it's not," he answered. "I should, on the contrary, feel very uncomfortable to think that I had come away except by my own choice. You see, a man can't afford to cheapen himself. What are you laughing at?"
"I am laughing, in the first place, my dear fellow, to hear on your lips the language of cold calculation, and in the second place at your odd notion of the process by which a man keeps himself up in the market."
"I assure you it's the correct notion. I came here as a particular favour to Mr. Sloane. It was expressly understood so. The sort of work was odious to me. I had regularly to break myself in. I had to trample on my convictions, preferences, prejudices. I don't take such things easily. I take them hard, and when once the effort has been made, I can't consent to have it wasted. If Mr. Sloane needed me then, he needs me still. I am ignorant of any change having taken place in his intentions or in his means of satisfying them. I came not to amuse him, but to draw a certain work. I hope to remain until the work is completed. To go away sooner is to make a confession of incapacity, which, I protest, costs me too much, and I am too conceited, if you like."
Theodore spoke these words with a face which I have never seen him wear, a fixed, mechanical smile, a hard, dry glitter in his eyes, a harsh, strident tone in his voice, in his whole physiognomy a gleam, as it were, a note of defiance.
Now, I confess that for defiance I have never been conscious of an especial relish. When I am defied, I am beastly. "My dear man," I replied, "your sentiments do you prodigious credit. Your very ingenious theory of your present situation, as well as your extremely pronounced sense of your personal value, are calculated to ensure you a degree of practical success which can very well dispense with the furtherance of my poor good wishes." Oh, the grimness of his visage as he listened to this, and I suppose I may add the grimness of mine.
but I have ceased to be puzzled. Theodore's conduct for the past 10 days is suddenly illumined with a backward, lurid ray. I will note down here a few plain truths, which it behooves me to take to heart, commit to memory. Theodore is jealous of Maximus Austin. Theodore hates the said Maximus. Theodore has been seeking for the past 3 months to see his name written, last but not least, in a certain testamentary document. Finally, I bequeath to my dear young friend Theodore Lyle, in return for invaluable services and unfailing devotion, the bulk of my property, real and personal, consisting of... Page 20. Hereupon follows an exhaustive enumeration of houses, lands, public securities, books, pictures, horses, and dogs. It is for this that he has toiled, and watched, and prayed, submitted to intellectual weariness and spiritual torture, accommodated himself to levity, blasphemy, and insult. For this he sets his teeth and tightens his grasp. For this he'll fight. Dear me, it's an immense weight of one's mind. There are nothing, then, but vulgar common laws, no sublime exceptions, no transcendent anomalies. Theodore's a knave, a hypo, nay, nay, stay, irreverent hand. Theodore's a man. Well, that's all I want. He wants fight, he shall have it. Have I got, at last, my simple, natural emotion?